Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions.
And our legendary host, Alfonso Garcia.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for the intro, as always.
Yeah, you always get a good intro. I'm still jealous of that.
And Nathan from Legendary Productions.
Honestly, that makes me so happy. It actually does feel good, huh, Alfonso?
Yeah, and it does feel... I'm going to do the Michael Buffer one where just like... Ooh. Do that next time.
Okay.
When I say your name.
Are we allowed to do that?
I'll do that next time. Well, no, he'll sue if I do the rumble line.
Oh, just don't say that.
Yeah.
But you I can say, let's get ready to stumble.
But I can go like, Nathan Prince.
Okay, do that next time because I was really, I actually got really giddy on that one. I like that. Anyway, hey, since we last met and chatted, I know we opened Frozen. We'll just chat about that a little bit and then introduce our guests. I think it'll be a great thing to jump into.
Yeah, well, yeah, you opened Frozen and I was there in the audience for it. And just as always, iconic job as ever. It was epic. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man.
An amazing show.
Thank you, buddy. It was a big show. And as I said before the show, there's a name in there with everyone that contributed to making it successful. And that's the most moving part about any show. But the bowl, there's something special about having 2 days to load in that entire production. Like literally the set, costumes, props, tech, truss, lighting, everything is brought in 2 days. The cast comes in and plays on the partial set. And they get 1 day with orchestra. And then we open with public dress. I mean, it was a huge thing. And to give a spoiler alert, which I haven't said because now it's over, I will. When we originally said yes to the show, I was thinking, yay, Disney Frozen movie. I could do that in my sleep. I've seen it 22 times, maybe more, partly because of my kids, but I like the show too. But I said yes, and then I'll be honest. After the first, I'm usually honest, but I'll be honest again. here, I'll be honest this time. But anyway, after the first day of auditions, I went home, and I was like, someone's like, hey, you should watch it on Disney Plus. And usually I try not to do that unless I have no idea what the show is. Because I don't want to compete, I want to create. And then sometimes I'll be like, okay, here's my baseline. Now I'll watch it to see what I could take that works. Don't take what doesn't work, in my opinion. You know, that's kind of, I don't think it's stealing. Art was created so we can grow together and learn together, you know? So, but I watched it that night and I actually had a freak out. I was like, what? The guy's parts are huge. There's harmonies, there's duets. He doesn't just sing with Sven. What? And like, The Pabby, the characters, they come in earlier and then they have songs and big dance numbers that aren't in them. And I kind of was like, oh, crap. Like, what did we say yes to? And I'm like thinking about the set and getting the set there was very expensive. Getting it delivered, it was just a lot that just, it grew that night at 3 a.m. I literally was like, oh, this show is going to become way bigger than I even imagined.
Was any of that, you know, like set costumes, where did you get that? That come from Disney?
No, part of the set was rented from a touring company. Part of the set, I'm not good at statistics, but we'll just say, or percentages, we'll just say 30% of the set was rented. The rest was created for the Bull stage because the Bull's a concrete slab.
Yeah.
There's no flyer systems. The trussing we brought in, you can't hang a lot of weight from it. We had to make sure we scaled how much we did hang in and out and... So about that, and then costumes, about 80% of it was our costumes. Only a few of the bigger dresses, the magnet dress, and then a few other things were rented. And some ensemble gowns and stuff, but about 80% of it was our costumes too. Partly so we could rent out the other theaters for cheaper prices than we were charged.
I got a question on that because I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about, we don't want to compete, we want to create. But when you do a Disney show like that and everybody is like familiar with it already, mm-hmm. like they know the songs, they know the way that the lines are delivered, they know the inflection. So let's say Elsa and Anna from that, how much freedom did they have to create a character?
A lot of freedom. The truth is, like I tell the cast and we could talk about that a little bit later, but as I tell, and Alfonso could attribute to this, I tell the cast all the time, I don't want you playing Elsa. I want Hillary or Tiffany playing Elsa, like bringing traits of her, because I want the audience to connect to you as the performer. Mm-hmm. I want them to go to that and not go, wow, they're fake, they're that person, because it's hard to invest in a gimmick or a cartoon. So I they have a lot of freedom. And then there's certain things I'll say, I want to see this. And that's, I think our job as directors is to be the audience's eyes and feelers and say, hey, this is what I need the audience to feel in this moment because they're expecting this. But beyond that, I try to give a pretty wide range of bring you into the role. How would Elsa feel in this moment? Not how does Hillary feel, but Hillary will be portraying or Tiffany will be playing these roles. And then you say, hey, how would she feel in this moment is what I want you to convey to the audience. Because that's who we're investing in for 2 hours or 2 hours plus. Yeah. So that's kind of how we approach it. But obviously there's iconic things, gestures and movements that if you don't do, they're going to go, oh, they tried. They missed it. And I don't ever want the audience walking away going, oh, they tried. I'd rather them go, wow, they did good with everything that they brought. Not, oh, they tried. So
well, and that was some packed out performances too. How many people would you estimate you had in that crowd?
I think we added it, tried to add it up the other day, probably about 40,000 people, probably
over the course
of
several nights
of 5 nights. Because the seats hold about 5 and then the grass and then they sit way out. So even if you just say 5 times the 6 shows with the public dress, you could say 30,000, but there was more than that. So just to be exaggerate a little, embellish, we'll say 35,000 to 40,000 people saw that show. And repeats, we asked every night how many people came back. A lot of people raised their hand. Obviously, the ones that didn't, it's their first time there. And then they ask how many of you at the bowl for the first time. And that's another cool part about it. That type of art is bringing people to see other type of art at the Redlands Bowl, which I think is something magical. So it was a great experience. It was hot. It was the hottest week of the summer so far, and it's still pretty hot. That's why if you hear any noise in our recording space right now, the AC's on, a fan's on, and I'm dabbing my sweat. But
I will say, you know, it was like, it was ironic. We're sitting there and it was just winter. It's like the audience is like, I'm sitting there like sweating. I'm like, oh man, it's over 100 outside, but here to watch Frozen.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, the cast were great sports. Usually before we circle up and we'll focus, meditate or pray, whatever we do in that moment as a cast. And sometimes I'll do like a little thing, like make the cast copy me. And in a couple of rehearsals, I would tell the cast, all right, guys, here's the deal. It's hot. Everyone say it's hot. And they're like, it's hot. All right, we don't need to say it anymore. We know it's hot. The excuse is behind us. Let's put this show on and make it winter. And the cast, I'm being straight up, I don't think I heard anyone complain too much about. Obviously, they're wiping their sweat and having fans on their face. But everyone wearing layer and layer of costumes went to town. And they did not complain. It was one of the best experiences that I've had as a director in a long time with an entire cast that I genuinely loved being with. I wanted to be at rehearsals. And there's been shows recently where that's not always the case, not just with Legendary, but in general. But this has been, it was just such a great process. And which honestly, we could maybe bring on our guest because he can kind of elaborate on this too. And then Alfonso could chime in on some of this stuff too.
Well, yeah, let's bring in our guest. He's been sitting here waiting very patiently.
Well, yeah. That's actually a beautiful segue. You talk about, you brought up Pabby earlier.
Yes.
So spoiler, this was our Pabby in Frozen. And you talk about just rehearsal being a great environment, a great place to be. This gentleman right here was a big part of that. And that's Josh Cassis here. Who again was our Pabby and Frozen. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's okay. So great to see you guys again. Yeah,
dude, he walked up and said, it's only been like 2 weeks, but honestly, it feels longer than that. We miss you too, man. I miss you, buddy. And Alfonso, I want to tag into that. His energy from the audition process all the way through has been so good, man. And I love that. And I'm not just going to talk about just his process with Frozen, but we'll get into it more. But he also owns a theater in Victorville. Yeah. What's the name of your theater?
It's Stardust Entertainment Productions. It was established back in 2024. So we're fairly new, but yeah.
I love that. I love that you're chasing your dreams and going for it. And I know you've had some shows in your belt. Let's talk about Frozen a little bit, and then we'll tag into what you got going on and got coming up and kind of your approach for your theater company. But let's talk about Frozen a little bit. I'd love to just chat about the audition process. We've heard other people come in. Yeah. We had Hannah on here who was helping with costumes, and she talked about her audition process. And I'd love to just hear kind of your good or bad. I'm down. Let's go real. Just your entire process, what you felt like it was from there to callbacks to.
Yeah, for sure. So I've known Legendary for a while, came to see a couple of your shows. I've had friends that were in it. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I would love to get involved in Legendary at some point, whenever the time allows it. And then I was scrolling through Instagram And I saw auditions for Legendary. I'm like, okay, cool, auditions. Oh my goodness, it's Frozen. Redlands Bowl? Okay, let's do it. Like, as someone who comes from the high desert, the Redlands Bowl has always been like on my actor's like bucket list.
How long of a drive is that for you?
On
with,
a good
with,
day?
With traffic even. Oh,
with traffic, like an hour or so without 45 minutes.
Okay.
Without.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's like was my dream to be an amphitheater bowl type of show. Like you think of the Hollywood Bowl. For me, it was like, nah, Redlands Bowl. That's it. That's it for me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to hit up all my friends who've been in the shows in the past. Like I hit up Tierra, I hit up Kaya, and I was like, yo, like be so honest. What was your experiences like working with Legendary? I truly enjoyed the shows I saw, but what's it like on that side? And they said nothing but like great things about you guys and about the company. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give it a shot. So I came into the audition. It was at a, like the house right there. And I'm like, okay, like do your best not to be nervous. I didn't know anyone because someone coming from the high desert and outside of college, this was like my first down the hill show or like out of my community. So I'm like, okay, just be confident, be strong. I think Kim was like one of the first people I saw walking into the building. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, cool. Let's get it going. So I'm just like sitting in the audition room, like, okay, they're going to call my number. They're going to have me go upstairs. And they did. And I went upstairs. I'm like, okay, here you go. This is your chance to make your first impression. Cause that's like, as a director, that's the one thing we look for in your audition process. You come in, that's the minute you step in the building, that's your audition process. Like you're auditioning the minute you step in. Cause you never know like who's sitting around you. They might be part of the creative team and they're like keeping an eye out, like, okay, who has the best attitude? Who's like the best like making friends with everyone, XYZ, you know? So I'm like, well, the audition already started. So I walked up and I'm like, hi guys, my name is Joshua Cassis. I'll be singing da-da-da-da-da-da. Sang. I felt really good about it. I was a little scared because I'm like, these are like, in my mind's eye, these are like legends and icons sitting right in front of me. So I'm like, okay, this is it. So then after that, I went home, chilled for a bit. I knew there was a callback email coming sooner or later. So I'm like, okay, like this is a big deal. It's Frozen. It's at the Redlands Bowl. This is like it for me. This was like my ultimate dream. And I got a callback email and I was like, yes, so excited. But then, unfortunately, one of my family members had an emergency.
Not a lot of people know this. I have not told anyone this, so they're hearing it from
they're
you
in
first.
It for a treat. Yes, a lot. One of my family members had an emergency where my sister was hospitalized. So I'm like, dang it. And so I emailed Kim back immediately. I'm like, I am so, so sorry. I cannot make it. Family emergency. And then I just started mourning it because I'm like, well, I couldn't make the callbacks. That's it. Like, I'm not in it, so I'm just going to start mourning it. Until one day out of the abyss, I get a text from Nathan being like, hey, notice you were in callbacks, but would love to have you like in the running and consideration. I'm like, okay, maybe. I'm a person of prayer. So I was like, I'm going to just keep praying about it. I'm going to like give it in the Lord's hands. Like, okay, cool. I'm going to just sit back and chill for a bit. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to just like start mourning it, but also maybe reach out for some hope in some way. And then the morning of, my phone was blowing up from texts from people responding to my name in comments. I'm like, what is going on? Opened up the post on Instagram, introducing the cast of Frozen, Pabi, Joshua Cassis. And I'm like, thank you, Lord. Oh my gosh, I did it. And yeah, the rest was history.
I want to tag into that though. And I'll tell you, that is 1,000% accurate. Your energy coming into the audition, asking Kim, hey, how was this dude? Like, how was he? Like, what was he seeming like? A good energy. You came up, you shined. You obviously are very talented. You have a great voice. And your charisma when you walked in the room was just bright. I wanted to be around you. And it's one of those times, like, I want you to be here. Like, so I think I even said, with your energy, I don't remember the text exactly, but I know I said along lines, your energy, your voice, I'd love to have you. There's a couple parts I could hear you singing. I would love to consider you for it. And you were like, absolutely, thank you. And then the rest is history.
The rest was history.
But yeah, it really is the impact that you had at your initial audition truly set the tone for what you infectiously created throughout the entire time of Frozen. You were a part of every group. You were just kind, uplifting. You did so good in that entire process. And I think what you said is really important. We've talked about another podcast just about the audition starts when you get to the parking lot.
Yeah.
Walking into the building. It matters. People are watching, engaging, wanting to know, how's this person going to be with other people? You know,
yeah. And
you definitely did that. But what was your experience with the bowl?
Oh my.
There's a lot, I'm sure.
There's a lot. Well, for it being my first bowl show, being my first bowl show, like what? That's an amazing honor to say. And I remember talking to Leah, who played the queen, who was on the podcast a couple episodes ago.
Shout out to Leah.
Go Leah.
Love you, Leah. We were kept saying over and over again, this feels like we won the lottery because what, over 100 people auditioned?
189.
189 people auditioned. And like they picked only 63, 64 people and we made the cut. So we felt super honored to just even be there and it being frozen. And we would just keep having conversations like, oh my gosh, like I feel amazing. I feel like we're on cloud nine. And I had conversations with Alfonso and Leah and Coco, who is a legend with Redlands Bowl.
Coco's
legend.
Shout out Coco.
Shout out Coco. She played opposite of me. She played my Bolda. And Alfonso and Coco were just saying like, oh, a bowl show is so much like different. You're going to like remember this experience for the rest of your life. And
how'd you feel the first time walking out with that audience, with the crowd that size?
Oh my gosh. So we had like for the opening dressing night rehearsal, yeah. And even for opening night, I was like, okay, like I was praying, like, don't mess up your line. It is a queen who knows our call. A queen who knows our call. Don't mess it up. And so if you haven't seen the show, me and Coco come out and like we immediately see like the audience, like that's our first glare. We're like doing our little troll hidden folk thing and we see the audience. So I'm trying my best to be like, don't get into your head. Don't pay too much attention to it. Just look at the young actresses playing Elsa. Look at Leah. Look at Alfonso. Just look at them. And I think the first time I actually saw the audiences, because like we're even facing for Fixer Upper doing our number. But the first time I ever saw like the audience.
Oh, that's awkward. Sorry.
We're chilling. First time I ever saw the audience was at the finale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When you're so invested in the scene.
I'm so invested. I have to. I'm an actor,
yeah,
you know?
You don't want to shut it off.
It was the finale. And we're out there singing Let It Go. Everyone comes back on stage. Yeah. Like, we're all there as like a whole cast, a family, if you will. And we're saying, we're never going back. And the whole thing. And it was on opening night where lights were shown all around the audience and we could see it snowing.
Yeah,
and
it's snowing, the lights turn on.
Yes, and we see the, and I'm not going to get emotional, but like, we saw them. I saw them. I saw all those parents who brought their kids and you see little girls dressed up as Anna and Elsa. And we saw them. And that moment, I just felt like this was my I made it moment. It was so cool, just seeing the whole audience lit up in like a nice light blue lighting with snow coming down. And I remember just singing and like Coco was holding on to me tight because I kind of like trembled a bit. So she was like, it's okay, I got you. And even then afterwards, just taking my bow and hearing that roar of applause, I'm like, Broadway who?
Yeah,
this is it, Redlands Bowl.
That was absolute magic.
It was so cool.
A magical moment.
Yeah.
And for me, as like when we came out there,
yeah.
And I'm standing next to Leah right there, and I'm looking out, and we hit the chorus of Let It Go at the end, and everybody's just like erupting, the crowd.
Yeah.
And my adrenaline was going through the roof, because I'm like, my God, this is insane.
And you see them too, because you can attest to it. You saw them with the lights.
Yeah.
Like,
I get it.
What?
Yeah.
I was gonna say your phone went off a minute ago.
Yeah.
I got a text. You better make sure it's not my text. Could be the same person. It was from the Hollywood Bowl. It says,
"Oh my gosh,
Josh, we heard what you just said. We will break your kneecaps."
I'm so sorry, Hollywood Bowl.
And now we got Broadway who?
Hey, that's fine.
Listen, that's fine.
Bye.
That's fine. Like I could bye to them. I'll stick with Legendary. I'll stick with the Bowl.
Let's do it.
Hey,
No,
Josh, I just want to compliment you again on your performance, and I think I told Alfonso this, but I've shopped at Aldi a few times, and there's a thing at this place at Aldi's. It's called Aldi Finds. They have like they'll sell a crock pot or random things, and they call it Aldi Finds. And at Legendary, I call him Legendary Finds. And Josh, you or Joshua, his stage name, but Josh, you are a Legendary Find, and we're lucky that you are a part of Legendary, just to have you around. So really, thank you for what you brought to the show. But just also, maybe even more important to me is what you brought to the community, the cast. So thank you very much for all that you did there. It really is. it really is something special, creating that family and that connection.
Yeah.
But you contributing to that is what made it special. So thank you, man. I really do.
Thank you.
As a director, I appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, I like the story that, you know, just one that I think listeners could take away is that he couldn't make the callbacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had, you know, something tragic happened. He couldn't make the callbacks, but you were memorable, so memorable the first time that you walked in. Like, you brought the energy, you brought everything that they were looking for, and, you know, that was enough.
That is the big takeaway, and I think that's that really is one of the biggest things, is you represent yourself all the time. And I think even in life, forget theater for a moment, in life you're always that, at least legendary, a change effect move is just, it's personal for me too. You never know who you're going to impact, whether it be a smile, a high five, a hug, or saying, hey, how's your sister? You know, cool that you're here for the show, but how's your sister? You know, and that, I think that's really what society should come down to, but that's a whole different podcast. But anyway, but thank you, man. And I do want to touch on his theater, Mike. Yeah, I know you have questions
about
that.
Tell us, we get a lot of questions about your theater company. So did you start it?
Yeah. So it was something I've always had, like, a dream to do, was to own and operate a theater company. My entire family are all theater fanatics. They were the ones that introduced me to theater in the first place. So it was always like, in my mind's eye, I would love to run this theater company with my family, make it a whole, like, family affair. And so I talked to them about it, and they're like, well, again, being a person of prayer, like, let's pray about it. Let's make sure and see if this is the will of the Lord. And we rent out a theater space. It's called the Cultural Arts Center of the High Desert. It's up in Victorville. And they were looking for people to put on shows there for their summer productions, fall productions. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to put my name out there and see what happens. And I did that, and we got approved. And the very first show we did was In the Heights. So, yeah, that was very fun.
In the Heights. Now, how was it? Our very first podcast episode was called, you know, Starting a Theater.
Yes.
And it was, you know, both of our, I don't know if you heard that one, but it was all talk about everything that had to go on behind the scenes starting up a theater, all the hidden expenses, all the things that we had to do that we had nothing to do with theater. And man, I, you know what, when we switched to Simplecast, I went back and I never really go back and listen to the episodes, but I went back and started listening to the episodes because I wanted to see if they switched over. Kind of, our old episodes are painful to hear.
I liked them.
Do you like them? I mean, I don't know. It's before we got John in, you know, on doing the live mixing. Oh, yeah,
our quality was crap.
It was like on a potato. It sounded like it was recorded. Like, yeah.
Oh, it was just a little painful to listen to. But on that first episode, like, we were talking about that, I would like to hear some of that about you. Like, what were some of the challenges for starting up your theater? And let's say, because I even had a conversation with two people this week about they were wanting to start up a theater or just get something going.
I mean, yay.
Woo.
Like, what was your experience? I would love to hear your challenges and the things that happened.
You did it
that
when?
You,
oh, 24?
Yes, we were established in 24.
Okay, so two years ago?
Okay. Rough time to start a company. Like, I mean, right after opening up from a, as Nathan would say, the COVID word.
The C word.
Which was just a hard time to get something going. But okay, so how do you pick the shows? Like, are you in charge of the decisions? You got your family make decisions with you? Or?
Yeah. So before we even had a creative team, like choreographer, musical director, XYZ, and all that stuff, it was just my father, my mother, myself, and my sister. All of us involved in it in some way, shape, or form. And we knew that we wanted our first show to be like a well-known show, something that could get us money and get the crowds going. And yeah, like, I had a lot of great mentors growing up in theater and director, and they kind of really helped get this theater started. And what's a cool thing about theater in the High Desert is that there's multiple theater companies, but we don't treat it like it's a competition. We all support each other. We all root for each other. So just having their support was something really cool, because I thought, oh no, I'm coming in as their competition. They may not want to help me. But no, it was great to, like, I was able to rent out some mics from them and all the whole sets, lights, all that fun jazz. So yeah, it was a lot of hard work, but we knew that In the Heights would be a perfect first show for us.
Be a perfect show, like you said, a good one for making money. Definite an audience draw, but holy cow, I imagine that has got some upfront expense.
Yes.
And you're just starting out a theater company.
Starting out,
The licensing fees on that, the set pieces, the the fireworks.
Oh, yeah, all of it. But that's something people don't really tell you about. Like, when you're getting started in theater, they don't tell you how expensive things are. Because, you, again, you have to pay for the rights. You have to pay the rental for the space that you're using. Costumes, sets, microphones, the whole nine yards. So it really does take an army and an arm and a leg to get a show up in the running.
Yeah, well, yeah, we were talking about, like, you know, I remember when I was starting my theater company. And it's just all the stuff that you don't know. Like, I, you know, found out, okay, so I want to name it Play With Your Food. Well, I'm not the one that started it. I took it over. But to get it, you know, to get it transferred over my name, I had to get a fictitious business license, run ads in the paper. I had to get a P.O. box for a place that the letters would go to, get the reservation line going, just, you know, insurance, everything that goes on behind this. I don't know. What was your budget for Into the Heights?
We were just starting out, and I wanted to, like, not spend so much money for our first show, but also make it good quality for it as well. I think our budget was probably around 10 to 15K, around that area.
That's a hard one. And yeah, like, Nathan tries to do the same thing, but you can't have that conversation with Nathan. You can't, you can never say, like, well, Nathan, maybe we should go conservatively. We have maybe $15,000 we can spend.
I'll sell my car.
The budget's 50.
I'll sell my car.
We're all selling our houses and the cars.
Right.
Let's do it.
That's,
I got a, I got a question to tag in on that. Yeah. What was the biggest shock to you? Like, your first show, what was the biggest, oh, I wasn't prepared for that, or, oh, that was hard?
Yeah. I guess it would come to, like, emergencies, i.e. cast emergencies. There was one tech rehearsal where one of our cast members who played Abuela Claudia, she took a fell and she broke her leg. Mm. And we're like, oh, lovely. This was tech rehearsal. We have a show literally this weekend. What are we going to do? And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, okay, what's one way we can make this work? It's too late to recast because we're right here in the middle of the show process. But I think it worked out that she played Abuela Claudia, because then we're like, let's put her in a wheelchair. It works out. She's a grandma. Let's put her in a wheelchair, and we were able to, like, work it out beautifully. And then from that on, we still had more, we did more shows after In the Heights, and it seems like it was one emergency after the other. We did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and one of our Sallys had to leave 2 weeks before the show because of health conditions, so we had to, like, find another Sally. Same thing happened for Rent. We did a production of Rent, and our angel dropped out literally a week before the show, so it was another moment where, like, okay, let's, we gotta find an emergency angel, like, ASAP, as much as we can. So from that, I'm like, okay, I can't take any more chances. And starting with Little Shop, I was able to, like, cast understudies, like, our emergency backs, just in case anything happens, knock on wood, no one drops, but just in case, we have the understudies to fill in at any moment in time.
I know you talked about community and not competition. Like, obviously, like, I like to talk about this all the time. There's 365 days a year. There's plenty of days to see all kinds of theater. Have you got any, like, where you're like, wait, we're friends? Have you got any back, like, where people are, I'll use the word jealous, or anyone like, oh, they're doing it in our backyard? No, no. Has that happened at all?
No, not really.
Lucky
not really.
You.
I think maybe because the other theater companies were also, like, very varied. We do certain type of shows. There's one theater company called Shrieking Owls, shout out to Shrieking Owls, where they do mostly just Shakespeare shows.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, cool, like, very varied. Amber does, like, a range of Broadway caliber or even cabaret shows, so it's like, okay, that's not necessarily up my alley, so I don't have to worry too much about that.
And you're kind of lucky in a way, because the space that you guys all rent is a shared space
that is
supposed to be used for theaters to come in and put shows on.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a built-in, like, no, we're all here to do the same thing. Yeah. So it's kind of, it gives the permission to do that, I imagine, which is nice.
No, it's so cool. Yeah, like, there's not a theater company that owns that building. We all just come in and we get to showcase and share our talents and, you know, bring art to the high desert.
I love to hear that. I love that that exists.
So you move in when it's time to do the show?
Yes, we move in when it's time to do the shows.
Where do you do your rehearsals?
We have different areas in the high desert where we use rehearsal spaces. A lot of other theater companies uses dance studios. We used a dance studio called Multicultural Dance Center. It's located in Hesperia. So all of us use different type of, like, rehearsal spaces.
I think I know someone that owns or runs that, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways, we can talk about it later.
Yeah, but, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But a lot of people use like different rehearsal spaces. Some people use their own house. I did that at one point for In the Heights because we were just getting started. So we used our own house as rehearsal spaces. Or sometimes you could even use the rehearsal space in the theater. You just got to make sure it's not conflicting with the other theater companies.
Does it have their own tech in the theater space? They have lighting that you get to use?
Yeah, we do. Wow. But we have to like hire the theater staff to run them. Okay. So we have to hire like the guy who normally operates the lighting system and the
lighting
sound. Yeah, all that fun jazz.
I have a question. So you're looking at things a lot more from a business perspective as well, not just, you know, directing. So is it harder, would you say, to put on a good show or to get people into the building to see that show? What's harder?
I think getting people to come in to see it. Because the cast is like super talented and everyone in the production team, like our musical directors, fantastic. Our choreographer is amazing. Everyone on the team, like everyone is so fantastic. But it being the high desert, there's not a lot of promotional stuff we can do other than putting it on social media, handing out flyers, going to our local businesses and like, hey, do you want a sponsor? Can we put these flyers up? So it's been rough, not only for me, but for a couple other theater companies to really just get, you know, butts in those seats.
That's why I asked that, because I know the high desert, it's definitely emerging, but it's on the ground level in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
With theater starting up and doing shows. So yeah, I would imagine that's difficult.
Yeah. And a lot of people like have that complaint, like, oh, there's nothing to do in the high desert. Well, actually there is. You just got to really dig deep and look for it. We're here. We promise we're here.
Well, and I will say that's two things I'm going to tell you is keep going. Same thing, Mark. We got advice on podcast and even with the theater, it starts small. And there was a few shows in the first 3 years, especially during the C word, that the audience was smaller than the cast size.
Yeah.
And cast get discouraged by that. They're like, there's five people there. Yeah. And the answer is, it's not how many, it's who.
Yeah.
You never know the impact you're going to have on somebody. And you got to start with five to get to 10. You got to start with 10 to get to 20, you know? So I encourage you and anyone listening, Keep going. Momentum, word of mouth. Let your quality speak for itself and don't be afraid to share what you got going on. And that was hard for me in the beginning. I'm not one to ask for money. I hate that. Luckily, Steve doesn't hate that.
Shout out, Steve. I miss you, Steve.
Steve loves that, but Steve's okay with that. My biggest thing was I wanted the quality to speak for it. Well, if you're not telling people, it's hard for people to come see the quality.
Yeah.
And that's something I've had to learn. I'll be at a Baker's drive-thru. Shout out Baker's. I'll be at a Baker's drive-thru and I'm like, oh, I got a show coming up. You should come check it out.
Yeah.
And I'll give them a sticker, give them a card. Just be proud of what you're doing and keep going. Same thing we told us with our podcast. The biggest thing we did. Yeah, we did start actually with potatoes and like stage mics. Like we had little handhelds that were horrible. Zach Michael was hooking us up with his little mixer on a little phone app he had. It was, but he did it. He made it happen. And we started with that. And it was really bad. I think our topics were important. It also shows where we started and where we're growing. But momentum, keep putting them out there. And that's one of the people that just bought or asked to sponsor us or represent us, whatever you want to call it. They were so impressed with the amount of episodes we're putting out that were still going and how many people are viewing the number of episodes we have. So I just encourage you to keep going, but it will pick up. And then if it doesn't, then you need to go, what do I need to change? What do I need to fix? And don't be afraid to change and fix. And always, like I tell you guys as a cast, do your best, then do better. Yeah. Set a new standard and grow. So you had a follow-up question. I saw you start to ask. Oh, okay. All right.
No.
All right, what's your next? You got a Little Shop next?
Yeah, that's coming up. That's September 25th, 26th, and 27th. We run for 1 weekend. Tickets are only $20. You could find us on Instagram, Facebook, at Stardust Entertainment Productions.
September what again? I'm sorry.
25, 26, and 27.
Boy, what a change from Frozen to Little Shop, huh?
I know.
That's a shift of gears.
For real. That's a shift right there.
We're jumping into Oklahoma. He's jumping into that. Like the swap. Like we're going to country.
The life of an actor.
Yep. So I got a question for you.
Yes.
So in terms of choosing your show, choosing your season, how many shows do you do a season?
We used to do just one a season, but this year we did something different, like new. I just wanted to test the water. So we're doing 3 shows this season. We started with Rent. We're doing Little Shop. Then we're ending the season with Finding Nemo.
So how do you go about deciding what shows you're going to do? Like, what goes into the thought process?
Yeah. We really like to do one family show a year. Like I mentioned, we did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and then we're ending the season with Finding Nemo. So it's something to, like, include adults and kids in it, or even a whole family to come and audition and be a part of that whole experience. That's something I would love to see one day, to see, like, mother, son, daughter, father, all that fun jazz in it. And then we try to make sure that we do it to, like, incorporate other audiences. So let's say audiences, I don't want to see Finding Nemo. Oh, but we did Rent. I like those type of shows. Let's go see Rent. Or when it comes to Little Shop, something comedy. So we try to, like, vary it in different categories. A family show, a comedy show like Little Shop, and then a serious, deep, but classical one like Rent.
I've said this in podcasts in the past, but you also have to remind yourself, and I mean this very kindly to your audience, but you're teaching your audience. They may go, I don't like Finding Nemo. But the truth is, our job as producers and directors, I feel, is to educate them and go, wait, do you like it? Come check it out. There's shows I've seen that I didn't know I was going to like. When we did Tuck, we thought it was going to flop. Yeah. And that's why we didn't take it on the road and do it at our other location. But it ended up being sold out pretty much every show. And I'm like, okay, if we do this show again, we're going to go wherever we can. But your job is to educate them and then go, hey, you might like this.
Yeah.
And that's how you build a season. People show up for shows. And I tell cast all the time, well, I have to do this show if I'm going to do this show.
Yeah.
So come out for this show so we can do that show.
Yes.
And that's something you're trying to teach your auditioners. You're also trying to teach and educate your audience, letting them know that, hey, maybe your spectrum of what you like is bigger than you realize.
Yeah.
And that's part of your job with art, is to experience, teach people and show people things that maybe they haven't experienced. So. True.
So I got a question for you, Nathan.
Yeah.
So you just said, so Tuck Everlasting. Yeah. You said when you did that show, you thought it was going to flop. Why did you put it on then?
Because exactly why I said, because I want to educate the audiences. I want to educate the cast. We got to do shows that not a lot of people are doing. I know it's a book that students read in school. So I was hoping to bring in more schools, like more, I'll say, children age audience with families, as opposed to doing Little Shop, which followed after that. It was actually a little ways after that. But it was a lighter show, and I thought it actually ended up being a heavier show than I realized. But the truth is that it was to educate and grow our audience is why. And I guess the flop wasn't the word, but I didn't think it was going to be as successful as doing Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. But I wanted to say, hey, here's an educational show that you read about in schools. My kids read about it in school. And I'm like, let's try this show. I actually liked the music, and I thought that was a lot of fun. So
it was more like maybe you were taking a risk on a lesser known show.
Yes.
But one that you thought could do well.
Yeah, that I was hoping that it would make them go, wow, they do family shows.
Okay.
Not just edgy or
the
Sound of Music, Little Mermaid, Beauty, these iconic shows that are done all the time. Yeah. I wanted to just go, hey, let's try this. And we did it for 2 weekends. We were running for 3, but I feel like that was kind of the best approach. And then ironically, or much to the educating myself and Steve going, wow, that was a great turnout. So
Josh, we're getting the wrap up signal right now, but just one more question for you. When somebody hears your theater's name in 5 years, what do you want them to associate that with?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I don't think anyone has ever asked me that before.
Well, it's your big moment.
I know. I would say not just for like the quality or the quantity of the show, but just stepping out being like, that was very well put. This theater company does it with a full heart of love for the arts, love for each other, because you could genuinely tell that these cast members love each other on the stage and off the stage. It's family owned and operated, so that they know, like, a whole family put their heart and soul into this. So we know that whatever show they're doing, or whatever show they did in the past, it was fun and it was loving, and they did it with their whole heart and soul.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love that. I do have to say, after that sweet moment, I know you own a theater, but it does not mean you can't come out and do Legendary still. Plan your seasons accordingly, bro.
I try to. I will do my best. I'm like, hey, Nathan, like, no, what's the timing?
Here's the frames. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, give me the frames. I got
to
come back.
And I know we'll as much as we can with our schedules, I would love to come check out your shows and support what you got going on. But I love that. And I hope in 5 years, I hope in a year that I see a show walk away, man, they put their whole heart and soul into this. And I believe that about you. And I think if you show that to people, what you showed us during Frozen, they're going to say that no matter what. So you're on the right track for that for sure. Okay. Not that you need my opinion on that, but I got to experience that firsthand. So I do love that. And thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being a listener too. I love that.
Listen, I'm a number one fan.
All right. Love this podcast. We'll take it.
All right. Well, you know, we mentioned, we told Monica on the last podcast we did, we'd go, do an Upstaging Gentleman thing, check out her.
Let's
her
go. Thing.
You know, we have to do a
upstaging
event.
Maybe get us, we'll buy tickets, but save us a sweet spot where we can all sit by each other.
Well, it's open seating. So like, if you guys come in a group, let me know. I'll reserve a whole row for you guys.
No, we'll get a group together and come support you, man. Love that. I just saw you post your cast. Shout out to your cast.
Yes,
shout rock out, guys. Do your best, guys, and leave it all on the stage. Go for it.
Absolutely.
So. Cool.
All right. Well, I guess we got to wrap it up. So thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Josh, thank you for joining us. And this is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
Nathan with Legendary Productions.
And this is Alfonso, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Catch you later.